Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tamara, Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 16, NASDAQ Futures up 93. We have the Fed meeting today with the announcement tomorrow, and we're leaking up here, seemingly still. We were kind of the snoozer days yesterday and today, as you might expect, because of the Fed meeting. Yesterday we were, Yesterday the Dow was up 228, it's a big move in the Dow, only a couple stocks there. S&P was up 7, NASDAQ was down 91, so sort of a mixed day. But the Dow, I think, is back either closer at a record. But, I don't think anybody really watches the Dow other than the TV people. Do we have Carl?
You do.
How are you, bud?
Well, I thought yesterday was actually a very interesting day because there were a number of things on my board that were big movers, even though the market on a gross basis was not.
Oh, correct. Apple being probably the number one.
Not just that either. After the market closed, there was a very curious statement out of Intel, and they rocketed higher.
They got a $3 billion deal with the government or something, didn't they?
Yeah, the fever is still on with regards to this whole AI thing, okay, in a big way. But there are some very interesting things happening in the tech space, which I think is I think we're very close to this thing breaking, and when it does, I don't want to be anywhere near it. It's going to be frighteningly bad because when you just look at you look at price sales.
That's what I've been ranting about for how many months now, and I finally win you over.
I've been talking about it for quite a long time, but. I mean, you just look there. Leave the E number out of it for a minute. Just look at price sales, okay? I mean, my professional experience from both an investment standpoint and from an operational standpoint goes back into the tech mania in the 90s.
Yep, me too. That's my benchmark, I guess, for manias.
Well, yeah, it's mine too because it was During my time as an adult and as a professional, it was the big one, right?
Yep.
Thus far. And until today. And even among the deals that I saw and the pricing that I saw back then, this makes all of that look like a Girl Scout picnic.
Big difference. Companies now are bigger. Which is even more frightening.
It's even more frightening, but here's the thing. We're talking about mature firms here. These are not, I can understand if you're a development stage company, you really don't have any revenue yet, but somebody is just absolutely convinced you're going to be the one, okay? There's 100 development stage companies at any point in time, but you're going to be the one, all right?
The industry's so new. You saw it in railroad, you saw it in television, you saw it, you name it.
Well, I'll tell you, if you want an example of exactly how bad you can get reamed without ending up dead, all right, take a look at Moderna.
Yeah.
Okay, this company has now been cut in half. Okay, they're yearly high. They traded 170. This year, in the last 12 months, right now they're trading 69.
Well, I...
And by the way, they're not bankrupt today. Now, do I think they deserve to be with a, you know, because of you know what? Well, yeah, I do, but they're not. And yet, this is a firm that even, you know, even with so-called, you know, forward prospects for their technology and yada, 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 okay, maybe not so much. The other thing that I think is fascinating is that when you look at NVIDIA in particular, the concentration, the sales concentration into the top four or five accounts is insane.
It's hideous. It's absolutely hideous.
Well, and
if something ever happened with Bitcoin, the place is over.
Well, and the other thing that I think is fascinating about it is that the defense that people will say is that, well, they don't tell you exactly who those people are, and they don't. They're in the report.
I've read stuff. I thought it was Microsoft, Google, and two others.
Well, and Amazon.
Yeah, and Amazon are 40-50% of their book.
Well, they're certainly, you know, I mean, duh. Who's big enough to put those size orders on?
But
right?
I've seen that written though, Carl. I've seen people publish that.
Well, I'm saying if you actually read their
Oh, okay. All right. Well, what do you think these other guys find out? Somebody seems to find out, or at least they write about
it.
Well,
I get that, but what's filed with the SEC is at least allegedly fact, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so and you know, they say company one, company two. Yeah, okay. We all know who those are. You know, we can certainly deduce it simply because who's big enough to, you know, to write those kinds of orders? But the thing that gets me about that is that while I don't doubt that there are certainly functions that so-called artificial intelligence are good at, you know, I mean, I've got a Pixel phone. Okay, it has the latest ones. Mine's a couple revs back, but still has the ability, using artificial intelligence, to take a photograph and remove things from the image other than the person I pointed the camera at.
Like a zit?
No.
That would work for a lot of people.
Well, that too, but I mean, but like other, you know, like other elements, like the, okay, you know, that I was shooting at this guy, that jackass I don't want in there. Right?
You know what would actually love this? Would have been Stalin. Remember how good he was at that?
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, but the other, well, and then the other thing that's really, that's, you know, that looks useful at first blush is one of the techniques that photographers with real cameras have always used is what's called bokeh, which is essentially intentional defocus. Okay, so you choose your aperture so that only the elements that you are actually aiming at are in one plane, are in focus. Everything else is not, because you're using a wider aperture and therefore the depth of field is relatively shallow. And this is how you get those really nice looking professional shots, okay? Well, AI can be, you know, can figure out, okay, you're shooting at a human. All these other things I'm going to intentionally blur. It doesn't look the same, but to somebody who's untrained, it kind of does, and it's actually quite pleasing. It's a decent effect. Now, you can't get the same effect that you would get with actual bokeh, but you can get close enough for, you know, for the average person's work.
Close enough for government work, as they used to say?
Well, yeah, and you know what? I mean, there you are. But is there value in that? Is there monetary value in this capacity? All right, could you charge somebody for this as a service? You know, like, okay, I've got this phone.
Well, I think if it's like anything else, Carl, and I'm certainly not disagreeing, it's like is my uncle, who was a tool and die maker, which was always very precise work, right? He said the idea, you could always get stuff precise. Now it just gets cheaper and cheaper. You know, it gets a little cheaper, but is it enough for this craze, I think, is where you're going.
Well, that's, yeah, and I mean, it's, and then the other thing is, you know, everybody is talking about this new generation of chips, and as I pointed out more times than I can count, that is a nightmare scenario for anybody that bought the other ones, because you are going to have your competitors in the market with better, faster, cheaper, and you don't. And you made that investment, and God help you if you haven't found a way to monetize it before that other stuff comes out and hits the market. You are at a permanent disadvantage with the older generation, that stuff instantly becomes worth maybe, if you're lucky, 10 cents on the dollar.
Well, you know, just to go back to where you started here, and I'll give you, bear with me, I'll give you a little dumb story, but it was 2001, somewhere back there in my memory. I don't know if I told you this, but listeners might have heard this story again and be bored, but I was in New York, my buddy Dr. J, of course he double books, right? And he says, there's a seminar over in Brooklyn, by the way, could you cover it for me? Oh, sure. What do they want to learn about? Repair strategies. And he goes, I seem to think that what I heard from the guy who's running the seminar, a lot of these people have Cisco stock. And I go, okay. Now Cisco is going from 60 plus, right, to 6, or 6 and a quarter or some number. This is after what you're talking about, the dot-bomb blast. Now Cisco was one of the top, they were one of the NVIDIA, Microsoft, something-something, right? They were the top five. They and
right.
Oracle and Dell, Microsoft, who's the other one? Intel. I think they were the five that were 40-some, high 40% of the then QQQ, which is right where the things are now, which is why, you know, I feel just like you about this kind of concentration is not good. So I was an OEX trader. I knew about Cisco, but we talked about it, but the pit, but I knew nothing about it. I mean, I knew we had a bunch of Cisco routers in the PTI office, like 20 of them.
I did a ton of those things.
Yeah, we must have had between my stuff, my trading, we must have had 20 feeds, Carl. We had a router for each feed. We left the office, they were all piled up on the table. I'm going, what are we doing with all these things? And we moved to a new place. I think we had one, you know, one.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
So I'm saying the first thing I do, I pulled a Carl 20 years before I knew you. The first thing I did was kick up price to sales when it was at 60. Guess what it was? It was like 11. And I go, what the bleep? How in God's name could some company be trading 11 times sales when they're been around a while and they're, you know, I won't say they were as mature as they are now, but they were. Pretty mature company.
But you're selling real product to real people.
Yeah, right. I'm saying, now, how could these guys double or triple? I mean, I go to the seminar, and of course, the term surly. Can you imagine a Brooklyn crowd? Of course, then Jen drops it. I mean, the seminar's at 7 in the morning. And we're staying in Manhattan, so I had to find a subway to get me over there at 6:30, which actually was pretty easy to do. So I pile out of the subway at 6:30 in the morning, or 6 in the morning in Brooklyn. I walk into the hotel, and this is long before Brooklyn is now the place to be, right? It was not the place to be back then. It was a cheap place these guys got for the seminar, or relatively inexpensive, let's put it that way. And these guys, guy, talk about surly. Can you imagine a bunch of New Yorkers who just lost a bunch of dough?
And I bet that worked out really well.
And finally, I said, he goes, you market makers, you traders, you know, ruined my stock. And I said, you know, be perfectly honest, you guys know way more about Cisco than I do, but I just looked up this one about price to sales, and it was like 11. What did you think was going to happen, just out of curiosity?
Yeah,
we never looked at it like that. Well, you know, but I think...
By the way, it wasn't legal to smoke weed at that time either in New York. Yeah.
And now I look at Microsoft is higher than that.
Well, yeah, I know. You know, here's another interesting thing. So the other thing that hit the news... just in the last couple of days, it was business related. You know, we stay out of politics for 30 seconds, right? So there is a furor going on right now with what Amazon did. They have ordered a 5-day RTO, everyone back into the office starting January 1st.
I love it.
Now, what I think is interesting about this is that, oh my God, the screaming that is coming from the from people in the technology work area right now, and you know, and the employees and you know, all over social media and everything else. It's amazing. You guys are slitting your own throats. Every single decent worker is going to leave. Da 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 da. Oh, really? Where are they going to go? By the way, anyone that thought that a virus was going to change permanently how work is done in America has rocks in their head. Okay. And the other thing is this: if work from home was the superior answer on a productivity basis, on a output per dollar invested by a company, okay, easiest way to look at it, right? Because I mean, why does somebody hire you? Because you produce something for them. if that was the superior model, it all would have gone away 5-10 years ago. Well, it didn't. And anyone that says that there's no one out there who is interested in better, faster, cheaper, well, yeah, they are. That's called capitalism. So why is Amazon doing this? Well, Amazon had their management has looked at the data and said it just doesn't make any dang sense. I mean, look, if there's somebody who can turn around, break leases, and get out of the commitments on the office space, it's them, right? So
All right, let me push back just to hear. By the way, you know, I'm with you. I love arguing with people, and I agree with them. You can be crazy in having people, you know, not work from home. If somebody's out and about and that's their job, they have to check in before they go back past their house to another appointment is kind of weird. But what do you suppose, Carl, if somebody's been home for, it's pushing 4.5 years, right? If somebody's been home for 4.5 years and all of a sudden now you say to come back in. Now, you and I, because we actually give a crap about people, what do you say should also be in that announcement?
Well, you know, that depends. I think I know where you're going, but I'll push back against it after you lay it out there.
If somebody hasn't gotten a raise or has a minimal raise,
right?
Essentially, some of their increased, I'll use the term net income, is now due with the fact they don't have a train ticket, they don't have to pay parking downtown, they might even have been able to get rid of the second car or let it degrade to the point where it's not something you'd ever drive back and forth to work.
But that's not where everybody who was all rah-rah about this are.
No, but I'm saying it's a sneaky part of it, and all of a sudden now you're in your sweatpants and especially they don't make guys wear suits anymore, but women still dress up, come to work pretty much. Okay, now you got to go out to the store and spend God knows what for 10 outfits. You don't wear the same thing every day.
I mean, and by the way, the old ones are trashed.
Yeah, so but what I'm saying is, if they still fit.
Well, there's that too. Well, that's your fault.
That's your fault. I'm saying that you worked out so much at home, you're too big. How's that?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
but I'm saying there is a tremendous, and you may have had only the lady watching the kids 4 hours a day, now you need her 8. The difference, plus...
Oh, there's a huge difference in cost profile, sure.
So if we were to say everybody's coming back to work and everybody should let us know we're willing to pay increases of 15 to 20% to make it happen, that's a different story. But you also have, and this I don't... I'm way more with you on this. I know a lot of people that, like, left town.
Well, that's where I was going with.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how. I mean, I've heard a couple of people say, "Yeah, my job's in New York. I moved to Tennessee. I'm sorry, or someplace."
Oh no! There are a ton of people that came into places like this, and that are and the distortions they put into the housing market here are outrageous. Okay, and the thing is, you know, their jobs in New York or D.C. or whatever, right? Now, the problem with this, as I have pointed out repeatedly to people who have been rah-rah about the real estate market in this area, is that there are no, you know, oh, that's a nice $500,000 house. Well, I got news for you. There are no $300,000 jobs in Knoxville.
No.
Okay. So if you lose your work-from-home status... you're double effed.
I don't see on a personal level. Well, actually, the lady, well, she's a little upstairs. She's getting divorced. She works for one of the healthcare things here in Illinois. She lives in San Diego. I said to her ex-husband, whatever happens if they call her back to work? She's got a problem. Duh.
Well, she's screwed.
Yeah.
Right. And the thing is, I mean, now there are people, you know, there's oh, good God, you know, back when I lived in Florida, and not in the beginning of it either, you know, so 10, 15 years ago, I had people I used to hang out with that, I mean, their job was fully remote, okay, including a couple of them that worked for parts of the government, and that's what they did. Now, I mean, you know, they were on a plane going this place and that, pretty regularly, right? I mean, they were flying around doing, you know, whatever. But in terms of their actual quote unquote job assignment, it was their house. Okay.
Yeah.
And there's always going to be that branch of people, in that group of people where, you know, their role just works for that. But even there, I had one friend of mine that was in that situation, was on the GS schedule, and got popped for promotion. And it's like, well, guess what? This job is in Alexandria. You want it? Guess what? You move to Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And I mean, that's the way it works. And I just... This idea that, oh, no, we can all push back on that. We can all change it. Okay, you can try. But I assure you that if you've got these large corporations, they've got very expensive buildings, very expensive leases. And when the whole COVID thing started, I said, one, two things, this is, you know, okay, you've got governors that are being, you know, jackasses and whatever, essentially making it impossible to have an office building and actually have people in it.
Yeah.
They essentially made it impossible to do, right, for a period of time. But here's the thing. You got those downtowns, those areas, you do that on a permanent basis, and you just destroyed your tax base.
Well, without a doubt.
But
there's another little piece to this, and I don't want to name names, but when I was first in business and I was working, my second job was at Pullman. You didn't have a computer on your desk. You didn't have a cell phone. You had a phone. And if you weren't popular, the thing never rang. There was only a few people you could talk to and make it sound like it was a business call, right? So, but it was okay if you had a downtime. Like I was working on the MBTA project. We're building push-pull cars for Boston. It was okay for me to go and sit as a financial guy with the engineer or with the program manager or with the person in the plant saying, okay, these numbers I'm getting, are they real? Can you show me this stuff? I was expected to get out and talk to all these people and actually kick the tires every place. That's what they hired me for. I mean, they loved about my personality. I could talk to anybody and loved it, not just did it. I mean, I actually loved it. And I would pay to sit down with the engineers and pick their brain for an hour and a half if I had to. I mean, and the idea of talking to people to me was I learned so much from these guys. I mean, today, all half the stuff I talk about on the show, I learned from these guys. And because people say, how the hell does this guy know anything about construction? Well, I talk to construction guys all day. So, but now a person who used to be our engineer and producer, he had to come back to work. And I'm hearing this story afterward. He's ranting and raving about how I can't believe they want me to talk to these losers when I could be like vacuuming or walking the dog.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sitting there going, what are you talking about? These are people you work with. You can learn from them. And it's the whole idea is for you guys to be a cohesive unit. This whole crap about, you know, talking around the water cooler and learning something, I never bought into that. I'd rather be like, you know, doing laundry or something when my free. Okay then.
Okay, well then you're going to be working at Walmart handing out carts.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the younger generation, and Ricky is not like that. They don't want to talk to anybody.
Well,
I mean, there were people in my generation like that too, but I mean, to me, it was an absolute fertile field. Hell, I could go sit in somebody's office and play football for the NFL and talk to him for a half hour if I wanted to. I mean, it was crazy.
Chief, what I don't understand about that, and what young people in particular, and I've talked to a lot of them. All right, you know, I mean, I've got one. I've got a daughter that's, you know, I mean, she's in her 20s, okay? And I have pointed out repeatedly, my customer service manager, who was arguably the number three in the company, okay, me, Marcus, who was my number one and basically ran the joint when I wasn't there, because I had to travel for, you know, with clients and vendors and things like this on a pretty regular basis. But then Liz Sanders was essentially my number three. She was the customer service manager, so she was the person who was in charge of pretty much everybody on the floor, direct report to me. She started with nothing other than a high school diploma answering phones. That was her first job at my company.
And she would get good at it.
And, well, she was very good at it, and she got there by talking to me, by talking to the other people, by talking to the people on the tech side, by helping me hump hardware when I needed, okay, you know, I need you to run this cable from here to here. Here's how they plug in. Here's how this connects. And when there was a point at which we outgrew the software that we were using to do customer management, and she and I sat there and it basically redesigned what it was going to look like. Okay, now she didn't have any programming background, zero. And yet she did know, because she'd done the job, what the workflow looked like on the floor. Much more than I did. And where do you think she got that from? If she'd been sitting at home.
Right. Oh, yeah, she would.
Well, yeah, never would have gone anywhere.
I will say this, though, Kyle, one of the dudes who lives in my building, I'm a pretty good friend.
Now, granted, Chief, that was one in, you know, I mean, these are the 1 in 10 stories, right? The other 9.
No, I think they're way more than 1 in 10. Maybe not 8 in 10, but they're,
well, the ones
I'm going to say 2 in 10.
The ones that end up in an office, starting with a high school diploma, when you got a cube plan for everybody, for pretty much all all the line people, yeah, it's 1 in 10. But the fact of the matter is, you want to be the 1, or do you want to be the 9?
Well, that's the truth. And a lot of people, Kevin always talks about, some people go out and get a certificate for the areas they think they're weak in.
Yeah.
You know, the junior college or whatever. You know, I will say this, like, the dude lives in my building, and he is now back to work 3 days a week. When he first went back, he's like, Chief, this is nuts. And I of course launch into our old guy stuff like you and me. He goes, no, wait a minute. I agree with you. When I get there, nobody's there. My boss is in New York. What's the point? I'm doing Zoom from there. I can do Zoom from my house. There's nobody there.
Right. Well, that's a different story.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's like, because I've never met my boss. Oh, that's cool. No, it's
that's
not.
That is a different story.
Yeah.
I wouldn't argue against that at all.
Yeah. It's hey, when we come back from break, why don't we touched on his Treasury statement the other day, and let's,
oh yeah,
well, you know what, just as an education thing, me too, when you look at these different months, there's obviously the months where they get money and the months they push money up, but sometimes they kind of change by year a little bit. I mean, not like the January one and stuff, because where people got to send their checks in, but they're not all the same every month. How about just highlighting a few of the months that you really, like, I'm looking at this August month. August looks like kind of a, last year was pretty much the same as this year. Although, boy, I tell you what, the difference in expenses last year and this year is pretty different.
Anyway, you think?
how the expenses could be so different. I mean, let's kind of just go through them from an educational standpoint and try and point something out to everybody. S&P futures up 15, NASDAQ futures up 85. Looks like we're trying to do the same to the market here as we did in a few other years, where we just kind of march up with money leaking in. I don't know if they can pull it off, but until they can't, Carl, I almost have to say that they've got the game on their side. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you'll find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at tom@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, North Bay Station Jacks. I'm Tamal, Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 14. NASDAQ Futures up 83, but we're a little higher. We've been here kind of since we came in. Dow Futures up 82. Let me get rid of my... I do have this Intel graph up here before I knock it down, Carlos. Intel, you're right. It was up $1.41 this morning. Oh, it is up $1.41 pre-market. Up to 22.32, but you know, it's, you know, stock drops from 50 to 10 and is up to 12. I guess it's a 20% move, but the stock was $30 on the end of July. So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, it's still kind of flat on its ass for, I don't know if that's a technical term, but over in Europe, we have the European stocks. We got the DAX up 115.6%, FTSE up 51.6. Kick around up 42.6, right across the top, 0.6. Over in Asia, Nikkei down another 378, 1%, 36,203. Yen is getting stronger, which means the dollar is getting weaker. Hang Seng up 237, finally an update for those guys. It's 1%, 17,663. Shanghai, they did not trade. Yes, I'm not sure why that is. Maybe Carl knows, but they did not trade last night. Holiday or something going on over there. Bonds. Unchanged, 3.61. The Bund unchanged, down 1, 2.10. Japan, down 2 basis points, 0.82. We have oil. These guys up 6 cents. Wow, over $70. 70.15. They got down to the low 67s. Now they're just perking up over 70. Brent, down a dime, 72.65. Natural gas up a penny, 2.38. RBOB unchanged, still under $2, 1.97. Gold, she has been on a tear, down $6 here today, but still over 2,600. 2,602. The headline is Gold Rally Hits Pause. Hits pause button, just like you would on your TV. Silver down 7 cents, 31.06, still over 31. Copper up a penny, 4.28. Foreign exchange. We got the euro over 111, so the dollar is, it's coming down here some. British pound 132, highest we've seen in a while. Japan still at 140.5. Now again, you got to look at this the other way. Now this is... It's euro's worth $1.11 on those, okay? Yet on the yen, it's 140 yen to the dollar. So you got to keep doing a reverse there mentally. Bitcoin up 1,100, 59,114. And we've got yesterday, real quick, the Dow was up 228, S&P up 7, NASDAQ down 91. How's all that, Ricky? Yeah.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:30 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 65 degrees right now with a high of 80 degrees. Warm with some clouds, then sunshine. Tonight's going to be mostly clear with a low of 64 degrees. Over to Phoenix, Arizona, 77 degrees right now with a high of 93. Sunny to partly cloudy, and tonight will be clear with a low of 70 degrees. Onto traffic in Chicago. Inbound Kennedy from Montrose, we're looking at 23 minutes. 51 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 36 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 25 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 34 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday in the MLB, the Cubs beat the Athletics 9-2. The Diamondbacks lose to Rockies 2-3, but the White Sox beat the Angels 8-4. A very good day for Chicago yesterday. Today we got back-to-back games. Cubs play the Athletics at 6:40 p.m. The Diamondbacks play at 7:40 p.m. and the White Sox play at 8:38 p.m. Lastly, the NFL. This Sunday, the Bears lost to the Texans 13-19, but the Cardinals beat the Rams 41-10. And on week three, Thursday, September 22nd, we got the Bears playing the Colts at 12 p.m. and the Cardinals playing the Lions at 3:25 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you.
The Colts are almost as bad as the Bears, but so that might be a battle.
Are they?
Yeah, they're not so hot either. Carly, I'm looking at these numbers in the Treasury statements, and I was talking to we have enough right wingers on the show, right, that are believing stuff. I don't really have a whole lot of lefties around me these days. I'll have to get Brendan back. Hopefully, he'll feel enough well enough to come back one of these days.
Come on, I thought this show was all lefty. That's what everyone tells me.
You know what?
People tell me all the time is, oh, you're on those guys. Oh, good God, they're Chicago. They got to be. Seriously, are we beyond this yet or no?
No, oh God, no. Oh God, no. And it's scary because he's. The big lie is all over the place. Obviously, on the right, some people believe anything out of Newsmax, right?
Right.
Nobody wants to check anything. So Sunday night, I stopped in to watch the Bears a little bit. the local watering hole. There's nobody in the place. The Bears aren't a big draw. Well, if they're on national TV, you're not a draw anywhere in a bar, really. So I was talking to the bartender. He's been on the show. He's an actor, real good guy. He's been in Stocks and Jacks a couple times. And he's, you know, on the liberal side. Doesn't make him bad. I mean, it doesn't make, but it's kind of funny. I have my list of kind of things people on the left believe that aren't true. And I've got my list of things people on the right swear by that aren't true. That's what happens when you get to be in the middle, Carl. You get to have a list on both sides. And he said, well, I can't believe the economy is in absolutely great shape. And I said, oh, careful with that one. And he's like, well, look at all the jobs made every month. I said, no, careful with that one. And I just, there was hardly anybody there. I went through the routine that you and I go through, and I said, look, if you look at the establishment survey, it looks like we put 3 million jobs last year together, 2 point something. I said, but look at the household survey. It hasn't budged. What do you mean? How could that be right? So well, I'm not saying which one's right. I'm saying if they're both right, it means the 2.5 million people went out and got a second job is what it means, or a third job.
Right, exactly, I've pointed out.
Yeah, and he's looking at me like I got four heads. And I go, Scott, if you look deeper, neither side, their BS is BS. I mean, we're not...
Right, the data is the data.
Yeah, even if you don't believe either one, if you say, okay, the household survey is rigged, the establishment survey, they seem to revise it downward every month, so the headline number is always going to be... even if you believe that, at the end of the day, after a 12-month period, there's a message there somewhere.
Well, as I've pointed out for a long time, all right, I mean, like, you know, there's all this yelling about, man's destroying the climate, right?
Yeah.
We're, okay. So I've said that just on logic, this makes absolutely no sense, all right? By the way, now archaeology is proving I was right. Archaeology is the study of historical facts, right? I mean, how do we do archaeology? We dig stuff up. That which is there is a historical fact. I don't care whether you like it or not. It is what it is. Well, as the glaciation has retracted, which, of course, is always because you're driving your Suburban, Chief.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it's happening, okay? What's happening in places like the Alps is at elevations where, with all the ice that was there, it was impossible. There is very clear proof of human habitation, boreal forests, and trade routes. And it's proof. It's not, those structures were not put there by rods from the gods. Okay, they were put there by humans. And so... wait a minute. You just got done telling me that this is the warmest it has ever been during the history of humans on this planet. Now, you can't argue that it was, back when it was dinosaurs. No. It clearly was both warmer and the CO2 levels were much higher. But the thing that gets me about this is we have the temperature records in the United States across huge swaths of the U.S. They were set in the 1930s. And we all know what happened then. There was a Dust Bowl and,
I think we know there was a mini ice age during revolutionary times. I mean, how do we know
There was a... But before that, there was roughly 900 to 1300 AD was what was called the climate optimum. Greenland got its name from that because there was actually farming and organized agriculture there, which in the modern world is impossible. Okay. And on top of that, there were trade routes through elevations of the Alps that,
Hannibal got his elephants through the Alps.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, these things, they happened, right? They're real. They're history.
Can I do this? Can I agree with you real quick? Make one point, and I got this page up here for the Treasury. Let's at least look at it a second.
Yeah, let's do the Treasury thing.
I will say this, though, Kyle, just because... There's been these swings in temperatures before. I do believe that you can humans have the power or a weakness to change local climate. And when you change local climate, I think a lot of times the environment creates the climate.
Well, you can pave over everything in tarnation and change the rainfall, runoff and such. Sure.
I think if if the Brazilians burn down half the Amazon, it's sure as hell going to change the climate in South America.
There's, you could trash a environment over a large amount of area. But we,
I think, Chief, that has long term implications other places, but I can't.
Well, anyway, it probably does. But you know what, Chief? We did this in the United States, right? And then we cleaned it up, which is why you can actually, you know, see the water in the Detroit River, whereas it was so murky and nasty, and all the fish weren't safe to eat.
Oh well, anyway, I'm looking at this Treasury statement, and there's a month. Yeah. But how does last year? Now this year we're talking about August. We had $306 billion in receipts. We had $686 in expenditures, which is somewhat. Now last year in August, there was $283 taken in, and only $193 put out. How do you go from $193 spent last year in August to $686 this year? How do these monthly changes? There's no month this year that's down to $193. How does that even? I mean, there was a big in September last year. There was a big outlay month. But how does the monthly go from? I guess when go from that number, like last July, this year.
Well, Chief, take a look at where it's going. I mean, the chart's there for month of August 2024. Look at where it's actually going. And here's where some of the nasties are.
But we had an $89 billion surplus last August.
Well, and you don't this time, do you?
Well, but I guess my question is somebody who looks at these numbers more than I should. If you look at the outlays starting in May, 547, 646, 496, 193, and then 683. How do you get a month, a third of any of the other months? Well, who did they send a check to? Was there one less week? Or, I mean, was there one less Friday or what?
Oh no! What happens on a regular? So, if you look at last year, okay, what you've got is this large distortion last August. Okay, there's a huge distortion.
Well, that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking right at it. Yeah,
well,
I'm looking at
it's almost $200 billion. And these kinds of dislocations happen from time to time, and they're typically from refundings or other one-time events. You got to be careful. It's one of the reasons that you really kind of have to look at the total fiscal, because if you like compare this August to last August, take that other element out of there. Get rid of it and get rid of the other from this August, and you'll see that those bars almost exactly line up.
What the hell what is other?
Well, I'd have to go back and actually pull that up to figure out exactly where it came from. But there's dislocations like this in the data. Some of it is from reclassification, some of it is from reallocation of funds that was allocated into somewhere didn't get spent.
Ricky, as soon as we get Kenny, let us know, will you?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, he's here? All right, why don't we push a lot of this off to Friday? We got to talk 15 more minutes. Joel will be back next week. But I mean, some of the stuff, I mean, some of it's detailed, but it's also, you learn when you dig through it. You learn, I think it's educational to people, and every time you open up a page, you learn something if you look at it, right?
Absolutely. And I think people should pay a lot of attention to this, but of course nobody in our political world today does. It's just like, oh, it's no big deal. It's no big deal. Well, guess what? You're wrong when we're running, we're spending more than twice as much of what we're taking in, and we're running a 30% fiscal deficit on an annualized basis.
We've already spent more than last year, and we got 1 month to go.
And September that,
and we haven't taken in as much as last year. We'll probably end up taking in a little more, but so it's. I'm
maybe
surprised,
a little more.
I'm surprised the receipts aren't higher. That's the part that's bothering me here a lot.
No, I'm not, because what I'm seeing in the economy around me says that there is a marked decrease in economic activity. A little decrease; it's a big one, and people are glad handing this and claiming it's not real. Well, guess what? When I can get hotel rooms for $56 a night down in Gatlinburg in the middle of summer, you're lying.
Well, let's kick it around more on Friday. We have Kenny. We already got Kenny warmed up. I hope that they're not as many. They're still selling a lot of pizzas at Polcari Pizza.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, they are.
Well, that's good. Would you say pizza is a, what they used to use the term in college? It's a, a regressive good. If you don't go out and get steak, you get a pizza?
Yeah, I think that's right. All I got to tell you, I was in New York City last week. I hate to say this. I paid $4.50 for a single slice of pizza. And I'm thinking to myself, $4.50 for a single slice. Not an oversized slice, just a regular slice from a, you know, from an 8-piece piece of pizza. And it was amazing to me. I thought to myself, wow, I said, it's gotten awfully expensive since the last time I was here just for a slice of pizza.
Well, we have the pizza argument every time we go to the Tripoli Tap, because Nick has pizza and he's from Boston, and he cuts it with the diagonal thing.
Yeah.
And of course, a couple of the guys with us are from the East Coast, and they're like, you know, the guys here are going, what are you doing? Why do you cut it this way? If you pick it up, it doesn't. It wants to drop and dribble on you. What do you? Why can't you cut it like they do here? Oh no, you can't cut it that way. It's got to be diagonal. You're surprised what people can argue about, Kenny. Obviously.
I know it is. I know it.
So what's going on today?
Just so we know, $4.50 works out to a $36
pizza
for just the cheese pizza. You're not talking about sausage, peppers, and onions, or mushrooms and pepperoni, nothing. Just the cheese pizza. It's nuts. It's just nuts, but whatever. Okay, let's move on.
Well, you know, your buddy, I don't think you know him. Actually, you might know him. The guy who runs White Castle?
I don't know.
He was on CNBC 6 years ago, Kenny, and the guy says, what's the biggest issue in the restaurant business? And he goes, there's never been a bigger spread between what you can cook something at home and what you have to pay for it to get out. He's between the leases, the utility bills, and all the other stuff. He goes, the spread is dramatic.
Right, and that's what it is. It was about the price of, you know, you got to figure the price of rent in New York City. I mean, I bought the piece of pizza I was up on. It was probably on 50th Street and Lexington Avenue. So it was kind of up on the more towards the Upper East Side. But, you know, it was a little place, but it's the rent, it's utilities, it's the taxes, it's everything that causes a slice of pizza to cost $4.50.
What's the, I haven't been in New York in so long. 50th and Lexington is what? Is it, that's not where like Macy's and all those places are. Is that the advertising?
No, Macy's is on 33rd Street and Herald Square on the more towards the west side.
Okay.
55th and Lex is more like going on the east side, right? It's still Midtown, but you're right on the edge of Midtown in the Upper East Side.
But you haven't come to the park yet, right? The park's 59th.
No, the park is at 59th, correct?
Right, but that's a nice area. I mean, that whole
It's a nice area. Yeah, it's a nice area. There's nothing wrong with it. It was just, it's like everything else. It's just the expenses in New York have just gone through the roof, right?
Well, that's what Carl and I were just talking about, that Amazon was the hue and cry about people. They're telling people you got to be back to work 5 days, and everybody's bitching and moaning. And I said, well, Carl, if you've been home 5 years, you know, between the new price of the train ticket, actually some of the train tickets here are down because they're trying to get people downtown, but parking, car, God help you if you got to go and buy a second car to get there. And I mean, it should come with a, oh, by the way, everybody's getting a 15% raise to cover it. But I missed that part, didn't you?
Yeah, completely. Completely missed that part. It's interesting because I think they made that announcement starting in January. He wants everyone to come back 5 days a week, right?
Yeah.
I think that's it. It's going to be interesting to see if that starts to happen again with everybody else. If they're going to, you know, they got all this real estate, they got all this space they're paying for that, you know, people aren't using. I wonder if that's going to start to be the trend again, where they say, you got to come into the office, like it or not, you got to come into the office. If you don't like it, you got to move on.
Yeah, I think we're going to see kind of more of that. But still, the cost of, if all of a sudden you need to pay somebody 8 hours a day instead of six for your kids, or plus a lot of people have the side hustle.
Right.
A girl in my building was ran around at lunch for 2 hours and fed other people's cats and did something with them. I mean, if people are out of town, some people walk somebody's dog, you know, make 20 bucks a day, that kind of thing.
Yeah. There was a girl in our office who had a side gig on TikTok. So, you know, during the day, in between what she was doing stuff on TikTok. And I'm like, really? I go, you should be doing that in your own time, not on the first time.
Remember in what was it, Future Shack? Was it, or no, was it the other one? It was not Future Shack. It was remember the guy worked in front of his computer at home, but the computer watched him the whole time. Was that 1984? It was 1984.
I think so.
Were they everybody doing the exercise in the morning, and they started belling the guy? He wasn't going down low and all, and he's supposed to be touching his toes.
Yeah.
They watched him every second of the day. Anyway, so we got the Fed meeting. We've got politics involved. We've got. Have you ever seen a I mean, you're probably going to pick up 10 of these and tell me I'm a moron for even asking a question. Have you ever seen a time where the Fed has actually done everything they're going to do 2.5-3 months before they actually announce it? I mean, they've moved the federal funds rate 50 points.
I think they're doing that for a very specific reason, because I think they're trying to get everybody comfortable with this 50 basis point rate cut that they don't want people to assume means that the economy is going off the edge. The reason that the Fed is being so aggressive is because, you know, they know something we don't know, and the economy is going off the edge, and that would typically cause the market to sell off, because people would get nervous about what the future looks like, and margins and profits and earnings and all that stuff, right? And I think what they're trying to do is make sure that, or at least try to make sure that that doesn't happen. So they're jawboning it, right? They've got two articles out in the Wall Street Journal, one last Thursday, one yesterday, one from Nikki T and then one from Greg Gibb, both demanding, you know, and why, and talking about why a 50 basis point cut is not necessarily a big deal. The three banks came out yesterday, Goldman and JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley. It's irrelevant. They're trying to talk it down so that if they cut by 50 basis points, that the market doesn't assume it's negative and start to hit the sell button. Right. But here's the deal. They've rallied the market so much in advance. And again, futures are up triple digits this morning, again, on the idea that they're gonna cut rates by 50 basis points. When they cut them by 50 basis points, then what are they going to do? So it's going to be like buy the rumor, sell the news type of an event, right? Where people are going to say, OK, all the trader types, you know, they made all this money because the market has rallied. Now they're going to lock in their profits. How do they do that? They sell stocks. Right. And so I don't think they can prevent the market from backing off, but I think what they're trying to do is just get people used to the idea that a 50 basis point cut is fine, there's nothing to worry about, it's going to get us to the neutral rate faster, and we're all good. And listen, I hope that works, because I'd hate to see it not work, because if people assume that means that the economy's going off the edge, then you're going to see the market take a bigger hit.
Well, it depends on your definition of economy. And again, I was talking to I'll use the term bartender, but he's also an actor, and he's been on the show with us a bunch of times. He's a real bright guy. And he just does this to get out of the house like one night a week. But it's amazing what people... I mean, we've gone to a period... Can't even feel free to tell me I'm nuts here, but somehow or another, these guys have pulled something together with the entire Obama administration. We've increased the money supply like 8% a year. We had inflation of probably 4 or 5. Yep. We told people it was 1 or 2.
Yep.
And at the end of the 8 years, piling into Trump, we ended up with asset prices up huge. Just huge. I mean, all the stuff I learned about in the market and was trading on was, you know, markets could go both ways. They never did. It was this creep. And I always thought, yeah, this is what they're doing, but there's no way they're going to keep doing it, because one of these days this inflation is going to pop out. Well, they just lied about it, in my opinion. So now we had the bulge with COVID. We put the money in. There was inflation you couldn't deny, even though they're still saying it's 20% when it was 40. Okay, so that's a problem. Now they've managed to get the rate of inflation down some. I think, Kenny, they're going to go right back to the old system. And you look at the money supply of the last few months, they're going to go right back to this 4 and 5% money supply growth. With inflation being 4% or 5%, they're going to tell you it's 1 or 2. And, oh, by the way, they think they're going to double the market in the next 4 years, and even more. The 1%ers are going to have more and more money than they have now. I don't know that they get away with that. I think the stuff is too high here. I don't know what you can double Microsoft from here when it's 12 or 13 times revenue. Maybe you can. Right. Maybe you can. But it seems like for them to go back to this last 15-year phenomenon or 20-year phenomenon, I don't know that it works this time. And if it doesn't, I don't know what happens. I mean, it's just weird.
Right, and I agree with you. I don't think it's going to work, and I do worry about how they're going to manage that and what's going to be the catalyst that really kind of ignites it. And I think the catalyst that ignites it is going to be, you know, from, I think both sides are talking about spending more money. So that's a problem, because both sides are talking about spending more money. No one's talking about trying to pull it back and trying to balance the budget and trying to cut spending. Neither side is talking about that. But the Republicans are talking about spending more money and then trying to cut taxes to give people more money back in their pocketbook, where the other one is talking about spending more money and taking more money. So you know, one of those is not going to work.
Well, they get to the same spot.
It's going to implode faster.
Well, the Republicans to in my opinion, economically, are always willing to want to cut taxes on people.
Correct.
Because that's essentially their constituency, or at least used to be, although the constituents seem to be changing.
Right.
They cut taxes on people, but they don't have the balls to cut expenditures to balance things out.
That's right.
And the Democrats spend everything, and they don't have the balls to raise the taxes to match it. So they're the mirror image of each other.
Right.
Get you to the same place.
Right. But that's going to be a problem, right? At some point, look, we're spending. What was that number yesterday I heard in terms of what we're spending a day just to carry the debt? Was it $1 billion a day?
No. Do the math. It's 35 trillion.
Right.
All right. So 10% would be. Would be what? 3.5
billion.
No, 3.5 trillion. So cut that in half because we're not paying 10%. So we're paying 1.7 trillion divided by 300. It's got to be pushing 2 or 3 billion a day.
Right. I thought somebody said it was $1 billion a day.
I think it's got to be more than that.
Boggling, right? And that's just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
That it's $1 billion a day to carry the federal deficit. It's amazing to me that you know I don't see where the end is. I don't see where the where's the light in this tunnel.
Well, and I don't know how they've managed to keep rates below the inflation rate,
right?
For them and for rich people. Meanwhile, other people who have to borrow money are paying way above the inflation rate, and that's really what's caused this delineation in society between the haves and the have-nots.
Right.
And if all of a sudden people decide, hey. In 10 years, I mean, can you get, just on a social level, not an economic level, why do people give people money, meaning the government, at a negative interest, knowing that the inflation is going to be 5% and you're getting paid 3%? Who would do that? I don't think somebody from the Stone Age would bring somebody 25 stones and at the end of the year get back 24, would he?
No, I don't think so. Which is why this is a little, it's getting to be where it is a little bit unnerving, right? Because the math just doesn't work. And what I don't understand is all these economists that both sides have that are all Ivy League educated and they've all gone to school and they've all studied, yet none of this that you and I are talking about seems to make any sense to anybody.
Well, we have to dash here in a bit. I know you got to run, but let me ask you this. If you were to shave 20 years off the boat of us, should be nice, physically anyway. What about mentally? I know more than I did then. If you were to shave 20 years and just erase the entire 70s, 60s, 70s, and 80s from our mentality, why would we think that this can't go on forever?
Well, I guess we would, right? I guess we could think it goes on forever. And everyone, apparently, both parties think it can go on forever. And I just don't understand that.
Why would you, Kenny Pulcheri, ever think for a second that if you gave a bank your money for 5 years, and at the end of 5 years your money was worth 60% of what it was, why should we cover the 60%? I mean, or why should we cover the difference? I mean, that is so insane economically to somebody who grew up when we did, and yet today everybody thinks it's fine. Well, the inflation's 3%. I'm getting 0.5% at a bank. What's the problem? What do you mean, what's the problem?
Right.
It's a huge problem.
But they've conditioned everyone to think that's okay. That seems to be the way it is. They're just making you think it's okay. The same way they keep telling you that, inflation rate's coming down, but prices haven't come down. So now prices are now anchored at a higher level. They're trying to condition you to think, well, that's just normal now. It's okay because inflation has slowed down, so don't worry about it. But yet when they start spending again, inflation's going to take off and we're going to go through this cycle all over again and it's going
to
be ugly.
Well, are they going to be able to tell us it's 2 when it's 5 for another 20 years?
Probably.
So, real stupid question. If all the people like you and I get off the train in the morning, I drive at this hour, but between my parking lot and the car, if every morning somebody came up and kicked me right in the ass, I'd be all pissed off. But if 20 years later, if it happens every morning, do I get conditioned to it where that's okay?
Yeah, you do get conditioned to it because no one's complaining, right? It is what it is, right? Everyone just accepts it for what it is.
I don't know if I'd like that. I'd take a different route at least after a while.
I was in New York last week, and I was talking to a friend of mine who lives in an apartment building, who parks his car across the street, because across the street in that garage, they only get you $450 a month. If you want to park the car in the building that you live in, it's costing you $1,200 a month. Think about that for a minute.
That's a number.
$1,200 to just park your car for the month in the parking spot in the building you live.
God. Did you... Hal's probably on, but that's all right. He can listen. Did you ever read a book, Bonfire of the Vanities?
Yeah, a long time ago.
I went through about half of it, and of course my mother, who was a voracious reader, told me the ending, so I stopped reading it. But there is a page in there, if I could get it. I don't know if you remember it. I don't know if Hal remembers it, but there's a page where the guy was making, that book had to be from what, 81 or something, somewhere. Yeah, he was a guy in New York. He was a currency trader. What do you used to tell people? I buy and sell money. Yeah. People look at him like, what do you do? What? But the guy was making $1 million.
Yeah.
In whatever year that was in New York. Remember the day he was driving to work, or he was driving from his home to the girlfriend's, and he was going through in his mind his expenses and how somehow he was spending $1.1 million.
Right.
Because the rent. But what was the deal with the wife? She had to have a car and needed a really nice one. So he buys her a Mercedes. Had insurance, and parked it in the building for, you know, it wasn't $1,200, but then it was like probably $400 or $500.
Right.
At the end of the year, what, she had 15 miles on it or something, but she had to have the car in the building.
Yeah, right.
And you sit there and you go, these expenses just keep piling up. What was the one where they had a formal event down the block where they could have walked 100 yards to the place? She refused to walk. They had to get a limo to drive around the block and drop them off.
Yeah, right. That was also part of the appearance, right? You had to keep up with appearances. People had to see you getting out of a limousine.
I can see the Polcaris doing that. I can see you doing that.
Yeah. You're a jerk.
Take care of yourself, buddy. SP Futures down up 22, NASDAQ Futures up 119. Do we have the professor?
Yep.
Professor Hal, you've been listening in. What do you want to comment on? We've been digging into some deep subjects. Where is he? He turned himself, he muted himself? Hal, unmute thyself.
No, everything seems fine, actually. Hal, are you there?
Maybe somebody took him out. I hope not. Hello? There you are. We're hearing something. Are you there?
I'm here. Sorry.
Yeah, unmute thyself.
I was having some fun listening to you guys, and I forgot I cleaned my mic the other day.
Well, whatever you're talking through, it sounds like you're in a trash can. We're getting like echoes.
Oh, I'm echoing. Hang on one second. Let me try a different mic.
I wouldn't get in the business of mic cleaning if you cleaned it and it sounds like that.
All right, hang on one second.
You know these professor kind of guys, Ricky. You know, they're highly technical, but, you know, what can you say? You need Ricky to fly down there and put your studio together, or what's the story? Oh, come on, one of these bits. The rest of the market. I've got Amgen up 228. I've got Caterpillar up 93. Microsoft, as we're talking about how highly it's priced, it's up 7.30. It's up another 2% here. It's up $7.30. Got NVIDIA up $1.22 as it's crept way back from the 100.
All right, how's that?
Much better, bud. Much better.
I got to turn the button on.
yeah. Even once in a while, you got to turn the thing on or plug it in. You know, it still kind of works.
I looked at the mic and the button was off. I had the red light on my mic. Microphones don't work if the red light's on.
No. So you've been listening in a little bit. How would you grade us? F, A?
In terms of entertainment quality, A+.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I really enjoyed your conversation.
Well, you know,
yeah.
It's weird. I'm getting to this weird. I just was looking at this receipt.
You know why I like it so much is because it's off the cuff. That's why I enjoyed it.
Well, you know, there's
it's not like, you know, you watch the evening news. And you watch those guys' eyes going back and forth in very short bursts. You know they're just reading the copy, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what's great about this is nobody's reading copy here.
Well, Maddie Weber was telling me that did an interview with somebody one day. It was not one of the regular guys, and Maddie goes, "Chief, that was really a good interview." And I go, "Well, thanks." And he goes, "You know, you're the only person who actually listens to the answer and formulates your question on the fly. Everybody else says I'm sitting in front of them." Because you're the only person that either can do that or wants to do that. And I don't care what somebody comes on. As soon as they make their first statement, that's when I get my first question. I mean, I might have some general question. But, you know, there's a reason for that other than that just being me. When FINRA comes in to audit our firm, they're all over me for the show, right? And and they're like, so because any notes, any questions in advance, all would have to be approved by our compliance group before I went on the air. So I learned early on, as this, you know, board on the SIBO, totally unscripted. What do you mean, totally unscripted? That's the term you're supposed to use. It is totally unscripted. Well, how do you know what you're going to talk about? I look at the news. I see something interesting. We got a guy on. We used to get people calling in with questions. But whoever the co-host is, you, whatever is important that day and whatever their strengths are, I just go with it. And whatever we wander.
It's really refreshing.
But the term is unscripted. And they look at me like I got time. Guys, seriously, we want to see your notes. I don't have any notes. Yeah. This is a debate I have with a 25-year-old.
Wow.
He goes, how do you do that? And I said, you could listen in someday. Oh, we have been. We have been. I go, okay.
Anyway. That's kind of what happens in my classes. I walk in and I've tweeted a couple of things that I thought were interesting. And if it's an in-person class, this happens all the time. I walk in and I'm talking about some model, and then what I tweeted or what I read about ends up just naturally being embedded into the discussion. And then I encourage people to like read articles outside of class to bring that into the discussion too. So it's just, you know, it's just refreshing. I mean, like last Tuesday that debate. I mean, I'd rather be sitting underneath the main engine with, you know, mineral oil dripping on me, in a steam environment that's over 100% humidity, with seawater temperature 93 degrees, and having to listen to that. It was just brutal to have to listen to that debate last week.
Well, one of those people is going to be the most important person in the world.
Isn't it scary? I mean, I listened to, you know, Trump during the debate, and he just drove me nuts. And then the VP goes on a local TV station to have her second interview. And she's asked a very basic question. You've stated over and over and over you're going to bring down prices. What are you going to do? And she starts talking. I mean, it's almost like a Sarah Palin response. She starts talking about how she's a middle-class kid and how people have lawns. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, ask a follow-up question.
Oh, yeah, they won't, though. They won't.
I cannot believe that these are the two choices we have. Somebody that talks about a lawn and being a middle-class kid. I mean, I wasn't even a middle-class kid. I was in the bottom 20% of the income distribution kid. And I would still have an answer for that. So those are the choices we have.
Well, when Trump kept going off about millions and millions and millions and millions of refugees, how is she not quick enough, like anybody on the show would be, to say, Mr. Trump, how many millions is that? Are we talking one? Are we talking 100? What are we talking about? Millions and millions and millions. Well, the other day was tens of thousands of murders among the millions and millions of people. I think I'd know about that if there were 10,000 murders of immigrants in Chicago.
But, you know, that's when you know people don't have arguments, is when they use generalities like that. Like people on campus will say, most people think this way. Well, yeah, but what's most? Is most 51%? Is most 50.001%? Is most 95%? I mean, when they use those generalities, you know they don't have an argument.
Well, right? I think it's really hard, though. I'll say this. On somebody who, I would have trouble doing this, the double speak, but the dirty little secret that we talk about on the show all the time is the inflation and the fix most people are in. In terms of prices and income and so forth. And that's really, I think, the hue and the cry about Amazon wanting people to come back from work. It's cheaper to work at home. And they're not following it up with a 10 or 15% raise, saying this will cover getting the car fixed because now you got to drive it. And, oh, by the way, here's money for a couple of new outfits, and you got to pay the lady to watch the kids another 2 hours. I mean, there's nothing like that from Amazon that recognizes the one thing about working from home is it's cheaper. Right. So, but I mean, the inflation, as you and I know, has totally been caused by government. by those two people standing there, right? By Biden, the Biden-Harris administration, and by Trump. That because it's been going on since Obama on a low.
Oh, it's bipartisan.
Yeah, so I'm saying
Republicans and Democrats.
But you and I can ask that question, and neither one of them is going to say, "Well, look at this is the policy. By the way, it was our policy that caused it, and we're going to have to reverse it to fix it." You're not going to get that answer out of them if you skewer them. You can waterboard them, and you're not going to get that answer out of them. A, they don't know, which is even scarier, or B, they'll never admit it. And I don't know which is worse.
It can't be their fault.
It can't be their fault. Absolutely not.
It can't be their fault because the bill, one of those trillion-dollar bills, was called the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah.
So by name, it's not these guys' fault.
Well, without a doubt.
It's the other guy's fault.
Right. I mean, the Patriot Act. All it did was take away like 80% of everybody's rights and freedoms, but it was the Patriot Act. Duh. Really.
Yeah, the Patriot Act, yeah. I mean, before the Patriot Act, Ross could go find Rachel on the jetway of friends. Now we can't do that.
No.
Or in my favorite, one of my favorite movies, Family Guy, not Family Guy, The Family Man with Nick Cage. Oh, I love that movie. Such a good adaptation of like that whole genre where you got, the great Christmas movie, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Or the version of it in the 1980s. I think it was called Mr. Destiny with Jim Belushi or James Belushi.
Must have been James.
John Belushi. No, yeah. Jim Belushi. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Destiny. Just a great movie. But in that movie, he goes again to the. He doesn't go through security. He just goes directly to the jetway and he tries to get the woman that in his other life was his wife, right? So we don't have that world anymore because of the Patriot Act.
Right. Well, I mean, And people don't even recognize it. I mean,
the Patriot Act has made flying so miserable.
Without a doubt.
One thing that I hate about the Patriot Act is when I went to Chicago one time on a job interview, I got one of those really awesome deep dish Chicago pizzas.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't have any sleep, so I forgot that I'd have to, throw it away when I got to the airport. But I had this deep dish pizza from like one of those old downtown pizza places. I don't know the name of it, but it had the sauce on top and it was like an inch and a half thick. And when I get to the airport, I'm thinking, oh man, I can't take this home to my son and my wife. So I sat there before security and ate about two or three slices.
God.
And then I had to throw the thing away, man. That just drives me nuts.
Well, I was I don't know where I was. Ricky, you'll be astounded at this. I was mentioning one of the guys that we works for one of the big firms in risk control. And he just went to Vegas, first time ever. You know, he had a good time. So I explained to him. I said, when I started going to Vegas, what it was like. And this guy's not a kid. He's looking at me like I had four heads. I said, well, here's the deal. Ricky, all your airlines used to be. Everything was run by the government. Your prices and everything were all fixed. And the first thing they did was say, "Okay, you can have these charters." But the one of the things was that you had to pay in advance, and if you didn't go, you didn't get your money back, right? So they had all these groups that would run charters to Vegas, and the plane would fly out with a group and fly back with a group, and they used old planes. I remember the first. Five or six times.
I think that's how JetBlue got its start, isn't it?
No, they were after. What was the one that was in New York that was the People's Express?
Yeah.
But they weren't a charter. That's when you could actually lower regular rates. Yeah. First thing
There was one airline that was out of Utah that kind of did that thing, I think. I think that's where
these are regular start. United or American planes, but they would just charter them. And they were regular United flight attendants, and they loved it. Because you were out and back the same day, so you actually got 8 hours in the air. You did that twice a week. It was like working 5 days. Plus, the crowd was about as easy as it gets, right? So it was like a DC-8 most of the time. One time we went in a 707. Can you imagine that?
Wow.
And but it was all open bar on the way out and on the way back. You showed up at the airport. Ricky, get this. You show up at the airport with your luggage. You know, you didn't bring much. You're going to Vegas for a few days. You're checking in at O'Hare, right? And there was people would cancel this thing and they couldn't get their money back. So somebody would buy those seats and you dialed 1-800-SODA-POP, and there was this little tiny travel agency up on near O'Hare, and you'd get them on the line, and they'd say, "What do you got? What are you looking for?" And they were, we always went Thursday to Sunday, but there was a Thursday to Sunday, and then there was a Sunday to Thursday where the plane would go. You're getting the drift here, and then there was a Friday to Monday, and so the it was like $180, which included the airfare in like one of the cheaper places to stay. Now, if you want to pay $210, you could go up to the Tropicana. If you want to pay $225, you could stay at Caesars, you know, or something like that. So you get in there, you give them your there's no security at the airport, so you give them your bag, you head to the bar, and you head to the plane. First, next time you saw your bag, it was in your room. They would deliver it to your room. So you ended up in Vegas, you'd start gambling, you'd go right to the casino, you have dinner, and you'd pile in your room at like 1:30 in the morning, maybe. There's your bag waiting for you. I mean, talk about heaven compared to today.
But when you fly from like New York to Vegas or Chicago to Vegas, you pick up that extra hour, so it actually feels pretty good.
Oh yeah. I mean,
1 o'clock in the morning is, you know.
Well, on the way back, all you had to do was somehow stagger to the door with your stuff packed at 10:30. They'd come get it, and the plane would leave at 2:00. So you had a chance to go to brunch, sober up, get to the airport, and stumble on the plane. And next time you saw your bag was in the carousel at O'Hare. Can you imagine that today? And on the plane, they had an open bar. You stood in the front where the bar was, and everybody's playing, you know, fight hour. You put your name on the fight hour bucks thing, and the guy lands, and everybody cheers. And the guy landed, didn't kill us on the way out there. I mean, it was absolute party the whole way. What is anybody have any fun anymore? I mean,
I think government has really made it impossible for people to have fun. I mean, it's almost like they've made it illegal. You can't laugh, you can't joke, you can't do this, you can't have fun on an airplane. Flying is miserable. I mean, young people may not know how miserable it is.
If you never saw any different, you don't know it. You don't know how nice it was.
Yeah, it's just a miserable experience. I'd rather drive across country in my minivan than fly. If I can avoid it, I will.
Me too. I don't understand why any kind of joke now is insulting to somebody. The fact is, you have to laugh. You have to learn to laugh at yourself.
Yeah. Well, that's where I direct all my humor at. I basically just direct it at myself. But I can envision a day where making fun of yourself will be considered hurtful, because there'll be a guy out there that is like you, and if he hears you joke about yourself and you're similar to him, you'll hurt his feelings.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can just see that, right?
You know, if you say something like, if you have a few extra pounds, which I'm working on, if you say something like, you know, it's about as likely as me being a jockey in the sixth race today. I don't know, what are you doing here? You're saying something bad about people? No, I'm not really. I'm just making a joke. You know, it's just, anyway.
If you go back to that movie, what was it, Judge Dredd with Sylvester Stallone? It was made illegal to, like, actually touch somebody. And at the time, I thought it would be, like, impossible to think that that would be possible. But, I mean, today, really, it's impossible to have, it's almost illegal to have a conversation with people.
Right.
It's really crazy where our culture is gone.
Well, people don't seem to have anything to do all day except watch other people. It's like we become Gladys Kravitz as a country.
Yeah, and then social media, I think, has a role to play in that. It just amplifies.
God, how many people know who Gladys Kravitz is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
God. Ricky, on a TV show of a sitcom.
She was Bewitched, right?
Everybody, if you were a young male, you had to watch Bewitched. Was there anybody hotter than Elizabeth Montgomery, for God's sake?
Yeah, TBS. That's when TBS had shows that started 5 minutes after the hour.
Even if you were like 12, you didn't even know why, but you were watching.
Well, I watched Bewitched
her
when it was on TBS, Tom.
Okay.
And it was, when you looked at the TV guide, TBS and TNT always had their shows like starting 5 minutes late. That way, I mean, it was a beautiful thing that he did. You know, the guy that started it. What was his name? The guy from Montana now. Ted Turner.
Yeah, Ted Turner.
He delayed.
He owned the Braves. He doesn't still, does he?
So it would highlight it in the TV guide. So that's how I got exposed to Bewitched.
Well,
good TV. Did you like the previous Darren or the new Darren?
Oh, I like the first one better.
Yeah. The second Darren was kind of irritating.
Well, you know, it's funny. My brother and I are 4 years apart, and we have. I'm hoping we have still red blood. I used to love watching Bewitched. He never missed an episode of I Dream of Jeannie.
Yeah, I never was a big fan of I Dream of Jeannie.
You had to be a fan of her. You know, hey, get a load of this. This is how I used to. It's now part of Evergreen Park High School, but there was a Baffin Tennis Club, and they had a bunch of handball courts down in Evergreen Park, about a block from my house. And I played handball there 4 days a week, or two times in the morning. We played at 6:30 with a guy from Pullman. And they had a big tennis thing there, and a lot of people go and play tennis. And one night I walk in, and I'm heading to the locker room to get ready to play handball. Three courts over, I see these four people playing tennis, and there's this blonde lady, and, you know, guys like looking at ladies, and ladies like looking at guys. I look across, and I go, okay, who the hell is that? That's not normal. I'm staring. Of course, I'm far enough away where she didn't see me. I'm going, who the hell is that? And somebody goes, hey, you're looking at Elkie Summer. And I go, really? Not only was she a spectacular tennis player, but let's just say she didn't look like anybody you ever saw before.
It was Elkie Summer?
Elkie Summer.
I don't know who that is.
She's a Swedish. Ricky, look her up. Elke Summer. And she's
a 70s tennis player?
No, she was just a regular actress that happened to be a great tennis player. I mean, it looked to me like she could do anything she wanted. She had the most... I mean, I never saw, you know, beautiful, beautiful. Anyway, off these subjects, what we were talking about.
She's gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Ricky goes, hey, wait a minute. She's pretty hot. Yeah. Where's she from? Is she from Denmark or Sweden or someplace?
She's from Germany.
Germany. You know, it was someplace over there.
Is she a current tennis player?
No. She's got to be 80-something now.
Oh, 80-something, okay.
If she's alive still.
Yeah, I think she's long gone, actually.
Yeah, I think she's long gone.
Yeah.
But anyway, we talked about the budget stuff. We're talking big numbers here. I mean, however you look at it, at the end of the year here, if we add another month onto this, we're going to probably have receipts of 4.6 or 7 trillion. These are U.S. government. Not state and local and the other guys, but we're going to have receipts of 4.6 or 7. We have one month left. Fiscal year ends at the end of September. And as opposed to last year's 4.4, so only up 4% on this economy. Yeah. It's supposedly booming. You would think with all this inflation and stuff, we would have more tax receipts, but we're not really. Now, the expenditures is going to be 6.8 trillion. Versus last year's 6.1. So we're going to have 6.8 versus 4.5, so we're talking about a $2.1 trillion deficit on the year. And year over year, I think it's like exactly that number. And we're supposed to be having we're not talking COVID anymore. This economy is supposed to be good.
Yeah.
What in God's name happens if we have another COVID? These are, if you listen to the people talk, these are the good times. And I don't see how that...
Well, they're of course, the good times. The good times, the top 1%. I mean, there's a reason why the Fed stopped publishing the checking account balances and cash of the top 1% in the first quarter of August 2022. I mean, the thing is shooting to the moon.
Oh, yeah.
They stopped publishing it. And I'm taking a group of students to the Richmond Fed in less than a month, and that's one of the questions I posed on the registration form for the this little mini conference. It's a mini conference on equity and diversity. And if you saw the questions I posed, you'd find them pretty interesting.
Can I get a real snarky question?
Are they there?
I don't even know if you could bring a group here. I don't think anybody's working here. There's nobody.
Well, maybe they're back now. But the last time we had to put our questions on note cards, and my students got a kick out of it because every time they came in one of my questions, because none of my questions were asked, they would just put it at the back of the deck.
I don't think here's how crazy it is. Boy, talk about learning by walking around. The guys at the Fed here with their watering hole and lunch place was a series, a place you've been in. And they haven't seen anybody. That's correct. They haven't seen anybody from the Fed in months. One night, they must have all had to come back to work for a day. And like 25 people come over to the series. And they say, well, we're here. And Greg's like, okay. Because you haven't been there, we're basically down a waitress. So they found a spot for him. It's like, hey, we're here. Well, that's cool. Haven't seen you in a year.
Remote working has cost one person her job. His job.
Well, I'm saying they would be at least on average 3 to 6 Fed tables at series every night.
Oh wow!
At least. Well, you know, we're talking 25 people at Fed. It's a huge building. There's hundreds and might be 1,000 people that work there. So having 10 people stop at the good bar across the street is not, or 20 is not unusual.
Yeah.
But we used to have a big table over there, a big round table, and it would be 3 or 4 traders and 3 or 4 Fed people. I haven't seen those guys in a year. 2 years. I don't think. In fact, one of them lives in New Buffalo.
Wow.
He has to tell him he's coming in, and so they get a desk for him. It's kind of nuts, but I don't know how you. We were talking with.
How is downtown Chicago though? I mean,
it's bad. It's real bad.
Yeah, the office building is still empty.
Oh yeah, and there's no. The northern side of the loop and the eastern side near the lake's probably a little better. But the financial area here with the trading floor is almost all gone. There's still a few people.
It's like that ghost town we lived in Nevada.
Well, it's a total ghost town.
Yeah.
The only
we lived in a ghost town.
There's like two
I
bars that are open.
Suburban ghost town.
Yeah, there's only 2-3 bars that are open. Series is open for breakfast. They got to be the only ones. I cook breakfast for everybody. I mean, after the show, I love to cook, and it relaxes me after the show. But it only takes me 20 minutes, but before the market opens. But if you walk around down here at night, there's nobody here. I mean, all these buildings are empty. One of the big buildings we used to be in, the Insurance Exchange, right across the street, is a full square block. I think it's still the third biggest building in the city. It's a full square block, like 20-some stories, and they were down to 25-40% occupancy, and the people just kicked it to the mortgage lender a year ago and took a $70 million hit or something.
Wow!
And I don't. The mortgage lender can't get rid of it. I think the mortgage is $125 million. They can't. 20 years ago, the place was going from, I don't know, it was ever really Type A office space, but it was Type B. The Mid-America Exchange used to be over there. The insurance, it was all insurance people, hence the name Insurance Exchange. But they had the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms was there. They had a cell there. They'd bring people in at night and put them in the cell. And the Social Security had like a couple of floors. They were paying like, this is, 20 years ago, they were paying, this is our government at work. I think they were paying $350 a square foot. When the Dirksen building came up, or one of the new federal building, which was Type A space, was like $30 a square foot. They moved in there. And paid this building over here to $350 for like 2 years. So instead of staying here for 2 years and paying $350, they moved over there, paid the new price, and oh, by the way, still paid the old price because they still had the lease.
Yeah.
You wonder why these people have deficits. I mean, you can't write fiction like this.
Well, I think the problem with politicians, I've been thinking about this a lot. It's like most, I listened to this guy's YouTube video. He has a YouTube channel and. He's from England. He got his PhD from, I think, the London School of Economics. And he was, I don't agree with what he wants to do, but I agree with where he was coming from. He was coming from this point of view that, why are PhD economists in economics so wrong? Well, most are probably from well-to-do families. And they end up, maybe working for an R1 university, high-level R1 university where they're doing research. Or they're advising politicians. And the reason why he said, and I agree with him, is that if they make a recommendation, and that recommendation, that policy has negative consequences, they're not going to pay the price. They're not going to pay the cost of those policies because their families are going to be fine. And then that's what's going on with politicians. Politicians run these incredible deficits. Republicans talk about, capping spending, and Democrats talk about raising taxes, and they're all in on, growing government at 6-7% a year, and and we have these $1 trillion deficits, probably in 10 years, $2 trillion deficits.
Whoa. It's $2 trillion this year.
$2 trillion. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, there, I mean, that's why we have this policy, I think, is because I call it political moral hazard. They're not going to, they don't pay the cost of the wreckage they inflict on people. They don't pay the cost. They have these really cushy pensions. They have a healthcare system that is separate from everybody else's. And so they don't pay the cost. I honestly think that most of these people don't have a clue about grocery prices and our healthcare costs. They don't have a clue about it. I don't think they even have a clue about how painful mortgages are and these interest rates are, because they live seriously in a bubble unto themselves, where they have this gold-plated pension system and they have this gold-plated healthcare system. I don't think they can even comprehend the pain that most Americans are in right now. It's moral hazard. It's a moral hazard.
You know what? Let's go to a quick break, because I want to just to gather more knowledge out of you. When we come back from break, I'm going to push back on that. Something is wrong. Absolutely. You're not going to get me to disagree with that. You know that. But the thing is, I love to argue with people that I agree with, just trying to gain more information out of them.
Oh, yeah, devil's advocate's a good position.
I think, God, I'm sitting myself with like two horns coming out of my head here now.
Well, I might be the devil's advocate. You
know, well, right. When I come back, I don't think, I'm going to run this one by when I come back. I don't think that our political system, not that I want to change it necessarily because everything else is worse, I don't think our political system somehow is working right now, but I think that what you're saying about the politicians might be wrong. Let me run that by and we come back from break. SP futures up 23, NASDAQ futures up 122. Retail sales looks like they came in at positive 0.1 rather than negative 0.2, so I guess that's good. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tamar, Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 24, NASDAQ Futures up 131. We have, again, the Fed meeting starts today. The announcement is tomorrow. Individual stocks have got the big mover to the upside here is Microsoft. Up 886 now, it's 2%. Yesterday, Apple was the one in the dumper. Today, it's still down 36 cents as we're talking about potential decrease in business. Who cares if they have any business? Why, you know, what the hell? It should still be that high. We've got the retail sales was up last month, which I think was a surprise. We'll give more of that detail as it comes out. The Dow futures are up 115. Over in Europe, we've got these guys were across the board. They're up a little higher than they were. They were up 0.6 across the board. Now it looks like they're all up 0.7 across the board. So they're up a little bit. DAX up 133.7. FTSE up 64.8. And CAC around up 55.7. So we're kind of gaining a little strength there. Asia Nikkei down 378, 1%, 36,203. Hang Seng actually a bump up, 237, 17,660. Shanghai down 13.5%. But that was not yesterday. That was the day before. They were closed last night, so careful with that one. Bonds, unchanged 3.62. The bond unchanged 2.11. Oil, creeping back over 70. 70.26 up 17 cents. Was 67.68 for whole last week. Brent up 3 cents, 72.78. Natural gas up 4 cents, 241. Gold, down 5 bucks, but still over 2,600, 2,603. Silver unchanged, 31.13. Remember I said it has been a sale over 30? Well, if you sold over 30, you got $1 shoved where the sun don't shine so far. So you got to be careful with that always number. U.S. dollar, this is part of the issue going on here, is the dollar is actually weaker. The euro is 111 now, which was 110. British pound 132. That's higher than we've seen that in a while. Japan 140. Japan is at a recent several month high as well, the Japanese yen. Crypto up $1,200, 59,211. That's it. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports, quickly?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:40 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 66 degrees right now with a high of 80 degrees. Warm with some clouds and sunshine. Tonight was going to be mostly clear with low 64 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 75 degrees right now with a high of 93. Sunny to partly cloudy. Tonight will be clear with a low of 70 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, Eamon Kennedy from Monroe's, 43 minutes. 74 minutes, Eamon Edens from Lynn Cook. Eamon Eisenhower from Wolf, 56 minutes. Eamon Dan Ryan from 95th, 38 minutes. And Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan, 45 minutes. Lastly, sports. The MLB yesterday, the Cubs beat the Athletics, 92. The Diamondbacks lose to the Rockies 2-3, and the White Sox beat the Angels 8-4. Today we got back-to-back games. Cubs playing at 6:40 p.m., Diamondbacks playing at 7:40 p.m., and the White Sox playing at 8:38 p.m. Lastly, the NFL. Sunday, September 15, was week 2 of the NFL. Bears lose to the Texans 13-19. Cardinals beat the Rams 41-10. And on week 3, Thursday, September 22nd, Bears play the Colts at 12 p.m., and the Cardinals play the Lions at 3:25 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
I'm going to say that the White Sox, though, are probably mathematically eliminated, you think?
I would think so. I mean, it wasn't...
They'll probably mathematically eliminated on 4th of July.
Wasn't it like the worst record?
Well, now they've won four in a row. They're trying not to get there.
Right.
They're trying to beat... No, it's the 62 Mets. They were an expansion team.
Oh.
Casey Stengel was the manager.
Hey, well, good luck to them.
Yeah, it was... yeah, they were horrible. They were, like, really, really horrible. The retail sales were positive 0.2, and I think they were supposed to be negative. So that was a surprise, upside surprise. Yeah, they played in the Polo Grounds the first year, you know, which had been decaying forever since the Giants left. It was a weird... Casey Stengel was a manager for the Yankees and won for years, and they brought him over to... I mean, he had to be, like, I don't know how old he was. The guy couldn't talk. He just would mumble. They used to call it Caseyisms. Remember the comment when they went to the Cardinals? They just built their new stadium. They now have another new stadium. Remember that place? The place that had the artificial turf, hell, where the players, it was so hot on the field that the players had to go out to, and they had to put soaked newspapers and put them in their spikes between innings, or they'd burn their feet out on the field?
Yeah. Well, Earl Campbell, have you seen him lately?
No.
He played on that horrible field that was under the Astrodome.
Oh, yeah,
it was
terrible.
Asphalt with, was it asphalt and like a quarter inch of like plastic grass?
Yeah.
It was essentially that. I mean, that just destroyed his knees. Can you imagine what career he would have had?
I'm gonna.
He gotten to play on like field turf?
Oh, yeah, I'm gonna show my age here, unfortunately. I was obviously an avid baseball fan at a young age. They built the Astrodome, and Leo DeRocher was still with the Cubs. The Astrodome was supposed to, well, it's glass, right?
Yeah.
And the idea was that you were going to be able to grow grass there. And it turns out that they couldn't get the grass to grow. It was supposed to be a grass field.
Yeah.
And then they said, I guess they could grow the grass, but you couldn't see, the ball went up, you couldn't see a fly ball in the daytime.
Mm.
So they ended
up, of the lights, yeah.
So they ended up having to paint the glass, which obviously ixnayed the grass part, right? So I remember Jack Brickhouse at one night goes, they're going to have to like pave over the thing or asphalt it, but they've got this new stuff called AstroTurf, and he held it up. I remember watching it to this day because it was like, I mean, it was one of those things I'd never seen it before. It was essentially a piece of carpeting with about 3/8 of an inch of padding, maybe not even that underneath.
Yeah,
and Brickhouse goes, this is going to be the new field, and they're going to call it AstroTurf, and sure enough, they did. And but God, if you ever slid on it, your skin just went with you. It was like falling on a carpet. But it was you know, it was an invention because
colleges in rainy areas had that stuff.
Well, yeah,
right? Washington State University had that carpet.
Where Marist,
Oregon State, Oregon.
Oh, speaking of which, you just reminded me of something. There's not much joy at Marist High School or at Sunday morning softball this week because a guy, Dan Garvey, 93, passed away the other night. Dan was the He was a phys ed teacher at Marist when I was there. Knew everybody that he ever was there, knew everybody's name, had an absolutely photographic memory, the nicest guys. And he was the father of Sunday morning softball, which I still play once in a while. And even the last 10 years, he'd come out and watch the game, sit there, he'd go and say hello to Danny, remember me from Marist how many years ago. Anyway, he passed at 93. He was only sick for like a couple of weeks. He was in good shape all the way to then, which is, I guess, a pretty good run. But still, the nicest guys. And anyway, that stuff happens. Hey, get back to the politician stuff. I think there's something rotten here. I'm just going to explain why I think this, and you tell me how screwed up I am. If you talk to, I'm going to say, politicians. I don't know about senators. I don't have a chance to talk to senators, but I've talked to quite a few, like, state senators in Indiana, more in Indiana than in Illinois, but a few here, and state reps, and those guys are, their nose is pretty much to the ground. I mean, they're living, they're not, those aren't big jobs, and they're living right with everybody else. If they come to a barbecue, they're not coming with security or police or anything, they're just coming, these are their neighbors. You talk to them, it's like talking to somebody else. There's no, I don't think there's any question that they know what's going on with their people. And I'm going to say that maybe some of the reps from Chicago, especially the people that just, you know, whatever, and they're like forever or something, maybe they've sort of lost touch. But when I was on the SIBO, and it's a long time ago, we used to go to these things in Washington and meet some of these guys. If you get a U.S. rep from some rural area in Carolina or Idaho or someplace, it's very unfair to say that that person, he or she, doesn't know what's going on in their community, because the people in their community are not shy.
They're really close to it.
I just think that even though they are, quote, the Congress, at least the House of Representatives, now senators, you know, hear all the time where these guys have been senators for 20 years, they don't even live in the state anymore. I think they've elevated themselves into something that they might not know. But I don't think that is the thing I see wrong about the Constitution right now is there's nothing wrong with it, but the way it's evolved, I don't think that's where the power is, Hal. I think a lobbyist, a big-time lobbyist, has way more influence than even 10 reps, unless they happen to be the speaker or something.
The problem with the lobbyists are evil thing, it absolves the other side of the transaction, right? People who accept lobbying money, who put their names on bills written by lobbyist groups, they're it's a two-way street. They're exchanging work for money, essentially. Right?
Well, I mean, when you define a lobbyist, though, I knew a guy, I think he's still with us, years and years ago, he was I don't even know if he considered himself a lobbyist, but he worked for, I think it was for Allstate. Yeah. And he said, you know, when a bill came out, if there was something in there that affected our place, my job was to go from, you know, senator to rep, place to place, and maybe I'd just sit down with one of their aides or with them, and I'd say, hey, you know, in this bill on page X, you know, halfway down the page, there's this piece in here that affects our industry, and really not to the good. I mean, and he goes, half the time the guy would say, how did that get in there? He says it was way more educational. Well, they didn't even know anything about your business than it was, hey, here's $100,000 for your campaign. Get this the hell out of there. Put my name in there and get me a contract. I mean, some people do that, but I think most of the time, I don't know. I mean, yes, we used to have people come to the SIBO. We had Tom Foley. We had Senator Dodd. We had all kinds of guys came to SIBO and reps, and we had Rosti a few times. And they'd sit down, and they literally, we had a lobbyist that worked for us, a young lady, she's terrific. But they just didn't know anything. They wanted to know about your business. I mean, how does somebody from Kentucky know anything about the options business? I mean, unless he, you know, has the smarts, if he's coming to town, you invite him to breakfast, he sits down. I think you'd give him, the max we could give him back then was $500. I sure as hell hope we're not buying a senator off for $500. So, I mean, there's a lot of interplay like that, which is involves education.
Yeah.
I mean,
I would argue that kind of activity is not what I consider desired.
Oh, no.
Activity.
Well, you don't think it's desired? I mean, why wouldn't you? If you and I were reps from Illinois, and all of a sudden we we're someplace and somebody says, hey, you're invited to breakfast over at the tire manufacturer. Mm. Why wouldn't we go? I mean,
yeah. I totally understand why people would, but here's the problem with it. Here's an example. I read this article as I'm building this health economics class. I read this article on NPR. And the NPR article was about how people are being discharged, and instead of staying in a hospital bed, they're being discharged at home.
Oh, yeah, terrible.
Right? And guess who opposes it? The people who would supply the labor if that patient was in the hospital, a nurses union. Now, my mother-in-law's a nurse, right? But a nurses union opposes this home care. The hospital loves it, right? Because it helps them lower their costs.
Yeah, it does it really.
And the patients probably love it too, because what happens when you're in a I hate staying in a hospital. They provide horrible customer service, probably because they're a monopoly. But when you're in a hospital, what do they do every hour? They come in and take your blood pressure and wake you up. You can never get any rest in a hospital. So, I mean, who's opposed to this? Well, the people who are going to lose jobs as a result of it.
I'll tell you who's opposed to it.
I can understand why people do it, why they lobby for certain things and protections, but I don't think government should be the picker of who's going to win and who's going to lose in all these transactions. I just think that's part of the problem.
Well,
now I understand why people do it. I understand why my mother-in-law would be in favor of banning, for example, this home care, right? Because she has a financial interest in keeping that patient in the hospital.
Well, there would be, it's not, they kick people. I'm not the world's biggest caregiver. If you go in for like hernia surgery, I actually took care of this guy for a day or two because everybody else was Christmas time. He went in like Christmas Eve. And he's a big, strong guy. He does his hernia surgery. Well, they sent him home. There was nobody at home. He had no more business trying to take him in. I didn't have to do anything, you know, crazy. But when he went to get out of bed, I had to grab his hand. He couldn't put his socks on by himself. I mean, it's when you send people home, you're supposed to be able to either take care of yourself or have somebody there who can. I mean,
I think the hospitals, what they do is they, for people who don't have any family to help them out, they usually send a lower cost.
They didn't send anybody.
Home care worker.
They didn't send anybody, and he offered to pay to stay there an extra day, and they wouldn't let him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, to me, if a guy wants to stay in the hospital because he has no help at home, then he should have the right to make that decision, right?
Right.
Having an insurance company or the hospital discharge him against his will, if he's willing to pay the extra, I mean, that's not right either. But what I'm saying is, I mean, I can understand why people would lobby government to protect their, you know, their union or their industry or whatnot. But it's part of the reason why we're in the situation that we are as a nation. Because that's what government does. It just, you know, the Democrats have the people they protect. The Republicans have the people they protect. And that's not a Republican form of government. It's just not.
Well, it should be. This is the weird part, Hal.
Republican.
I love jousting with you because this should be, if I'm in class with you, this should be a very simple statement you're making. Hey, if people can go home a day early, it should cut the cost of the hospital. But I'm going to say to you that the way the hospitals do their costing, I actually had a class in this in grad school, it doesn't make any difference. Now, you're going to say, Chief, what the hell are you talking about? They're going to have, you know, hospitals decide what their costs are for a room? I'm asking you a question. You would think that they would do some kind of a cost analysis on, you know, what's the rent in the room, how much does the nurse cost? That's the furthest thing from their mind. You know what the calculation is?
Probably some kind of average of total expenditure.
You take the entire amount of money you spent, you divide it by the amount of patient days, and that's your number.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is so asinine, I can't even. If you ever put that on a test in freshman year of college, you flunk, right?
Yeah.
What they do. So if you kick five people out and your nursing staff remains the same and now you have five empty rooms. You got five people struggling at home. Your costs don't go down a bit. The way they calculate it.
Yeah. Well, I think the problem with healthcare in general is just the way they define what I think they avoid these laws in the books to prevent monopolization, right? I mean, the anti-monopoly laws in the United States would bar what goes on with hospitals.
Oh, sure. And, they do. Right? They've lost cases. They still do it anyway.
Yeah. But how is it that a hospital can use or acquire monopoly power? How is it? I think it's because around the 1930s or 40s, healthcare was determined to be non-commerce.
You're asking why antitrust laws are not enforced in certain industries. Now, There's a subject, Cal.
Yeah.
There's a subject. You know who was is an example in this? I'm sorry to monopolize this, but your hero, I'm giving you crap, Dutch Reagan. When I'm going to say in the 80s, the average stay in a hospital for somebody who had a baby was probably 5 days. Something along those lines. I mean, I think way back it was like seven, wasn't it? But it was five. So somewhere in the Reagan administration, they said, we're going to cut that down to four and then to three. I think it was somewhere along those years. And they found out at the end of the year it didn't make any difference.
Hmm.
Well, why not? Well, because hospitals in whatever town you were in Idaho, if there was a hospital in that region, they knew pretty much on average how many rooms they needed in the birthing ward for that community for people to stay 5 days. And all of a sudden they're staying four. 20% of the beds are empty. And guess what? Their costs are the same, aren't they? All they did was raise everybody's prices. It costs the same to stay for four as it did for five.
Yeah. Well, you know, really only way that happens is if, you know, there's a monopoly. A monopoly provides, relative to a world that we can't observe, you know, imagine healthcare as commerce, where hospitals are not allowed to monopolize, not allowed to issue competitors' vetoes via con laws. Imagine that world, right? What would be that world?
Well,
we wouldn't have had a world that would have needed lockdowns because hospitals have incredible margins.
Right.
And that invites competition. And all these hospitals would be faced with a hospital across the street, like McDonald's is faced with a Burger King or an Arby's, right? So you'd have much better quality care because the hospitals have to be competing for these customers, right? Customers can choose.
Well, okay, but now there's, when you say, this is so bizarre, Hal, because the terms we talk around, you and I, and the way we are constantly are jousting, the terms have so many definitions. Now, if you were to say a monopoly, and I were to say, okay, in Idaho, there's, in Snarr County, I'll give you a county, in Snarr County, there's 25,000 people. Whatever the number is in a county in Idaho.
That's a big county in Idaho, Tom.
All right, so say it's 20, which proves my point. In the biggest city, there's going to be a hospital. Now, I'm going to say that hospital is probably somewhat of a natural monopoly. They're probably not going to have a calf ward because, you know, there's not enough people that need calf stuff. They probably don't have a brain operation ward. You're going to go somewhere else to get. But, I mean, for that area, that's like a natural monopoly. Now, in Chicago, there's a bunch of hospitals. There's some competition. There was. And now three or four places are buying all the rest of them up. Now, that's sort of a different. I'm going to say the natural monopoly in Snarr County is something we're just going to have to deal with. We don't need four hospitals in Snarr County. Okay.
Yeah, but I think the natural monopolies are a result of government action.
Well, I mean it doesn't mean that a doctor's
office. The hospital doesn't want a competitor. Right?
Well,
like a lot of people, I don't mind competitors.
No, what I'm saying is
a lot of people don't want competitors, so they are able to get their politicians or their regulators to block the competition.
Well, I know where you're going with this, but I'm saying
we can't observe that world.
I know where you're going with this, but in that situation, you have to define monopoly as something different, where if you and I have a doctor's office, and all of a sudden, we're going to expand the doctor's office, but to where we can do
blood tests and a few kinds of tests in the doctor's office because we think that the hospital's too expensive. If the hospital somehow has veto power over us in Snyder County, now that I think is a violation.
Well, that happens in North Carolina, actually.
Well, okay, but I'm saying that to me, I'm with you 100%.
I know that happens in North Carolina because there's this doctor in North Carolina, a surgeon, who wants to have an MRI machine in his practice, but the hospitals and the people that have MRIs, they have veto power over that, and they can block him
really?
From getting his MRI.
Really? Because I had to get an MRI a while ago. And there's got to be 30 places here in Cook County. You can walk in for $250, tell them you want one and get one.
Well, maybe the laws are different in Illinois, but in North Carolina, I watched this. He's actually suing. He's suing, and
he has
a lawyer.
He should.
He has a lawyer on his team, and they were in this local event here in North Carolina where they were talking about these con laws. And they're completely anti-competitive. In the absence of these laws that create these monopolies, there'd be generally more hospitals. And you really only need one competitor, right? You only really need one competitor to pull prices down.
Well, anything quality. We got a dash here, but anything they're screwing people on, that's where the competition is going to be. If they're charging.
Like, for example, my brother Ryan, this is how bad healthcare is in Lewiston, Idaho. He hadn't gone to the doctor. He hadn't taken his son to the doctor because his son's very healthy. He's playing college football. He's a very healthy guy. He works out, exercises. He hadn't taken his son to like this doctor for like over a year. He calls up to get an appointment and they dropped him as a customer because he wasn't coming often enough. If there were true competition, there is no way that would have happened. They would not have dropped him. They would have needed him.
Well, did the guy... was a subject for next week. Did they go into their concierge medicine where he's got to pay him no matter what to be a patient?
I'm not sure what happened, but he just posted it on Facebook that his doctor dropped him.
Let's kick this around next week because there's all kinds of that going on here, and let's talk about it. Ricky, okay. how about writing that down or else I'll forget? No, that's an interesting because it's all you have concierge. I don't know. I'll bet out of the 20 people I hang with the most, I'm going to say 16 of them don't have a quote doctor.
Don't have a doctor?
A doctor. We have urgent care facilities. We got this. We got that. I don't think they have. If you say, who's your doctor? Well, I don't know. SP Futures up 25. NASDAQ Futures up 134. It's crazy, Hal. I mean, it'll be interesting next week, our discussion.
Well, I don't think they have a doctor because it's just gotten so expensive. Right?
Well, I mean, there's not a whole lot of general practitioners around.
Yeah.
You know, if you got a heart problem, you go to a heart doctor. I mean, it's weird.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that is Medicare and Medicaid are basically setting prices, and their price setting actions have created shortages and surpluses.
Well, sure, absolutely.
They don't pay attention to the market.
Absolutely. SP Futures again up 25. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.